The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome, good night, to the doctors and with me, Dr. Denotha Archer. Thank you for joining us tonight on Guardian Radio for all things health, wellness, and things that pertain to the Bahamian society. So last week, we talked a lot about medicine. We're going to take a little shift. A lot of things are happening. We just had an election. We have a crisis within a crisis, like I like to say, both health and economics. So we're going to talk a little bit about the economy, what we could do, what will make things better. And so before I introduce my guest, just want to say we're brought to you tonight by Medical Concierge Services. We're located on Collins Avenue, number 72, right in the Heart Center building. You can reach us 326-1521 or 429-4880 for all your healthcare needs. Check us out on Facebook and Instagram. And people always tell me, why don't I give the Instagram thing properly? So it's medical_concierge_services. That's how you find me. I'm also there as well as Dr. D. Archer. So you can find me on most social media. I'm on Twitter. I don't hardly use it. I guess that gives my age. I'm not a Twitter person. So I'm a child of the 80s. So, you know, that's we need more than a couple little words, you know? Hence why I guess I like Facebook. So joining me tonight, here's a guy. I've met him in a lot of different places, interesting places back and forth. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we don't agree. Sometimes we're on the opposite side, and then sometimes we see eye to eye, but he's always had a keen sense of what's going on and how to rationalize through that. 40 years in the, the technology and information technology industry, and also an advocate. We've been on a certain, behind certain things where we know that we've had to speak out publicly against or for certain things. So Mr. C. Allen Johnson, welcome to the show. This is your first time, right?
Absolutely, my first time. Long time coming, but hopefully it won't be my last.
Yeah, so thank you for coming. You know, we were talking back and forth and you're on a couple of the chats I'm on as well. And, you know, this idea of the economy and diversifying the economy always comes up. We always talk about it. We don't ever seem to get anywhere. We're in a very critical position right now in terms of the country where we've never been in this type of place before. Our largest industry, tourism, basically was closed for almost a year. And so now we have to make some tough decisions. Let me first get your thoughts on everything that's happening before we kind of dive into how do we change things.
Well, I hope I don't scare the humans, but we are in a place that is very, what they say, precarious, a strange place. In essence, in about 3 days, by the 1st of October, we'll be moving into an economic zone that we've never been before. Though our leadership may not tell us, based on my data and estimates, and I see people now saying it, I guess people have heard me been saying it for the last year, is that we're to the point now that we could end up defaulting on our national debt. That we may not be able to meet the interest payments, you know, which is almost $50 million a month, no, $40 million a month. And we are very, very close to that edge based on borrowing, and we continue to borrow with no growth. We also, what people must understand, that also is, we have this multiple downgrades over the years with no upgrades that puts us in well in within junk bond status, meaning that our interest that we will pay will be substantially more. So even if we was to go to market, which we normally do, you see how people say, oh, you borrow $8 billion, you borrow $4 billion. What a lot of people may not realize is a lot of that sometime is extending your debt. So let's say you have a mortgage 5 years left on your mortgage, you lose your job, you have a part-time job, you're making $2,000 a month, you have a part-time job only making $800 now. So what you do is you refinance that debt and move it away from the 5 years and extend it for 20 years, which drop it below what you're making. So now, when you thought you would have been retiring this debt in 5 years, you now got another additional 15, 20 years onto it.
And more money.
And more, yes, and interest, because now you're paying the higher interest rate because of your bad credit. And one of the things is that we've had continuous growth in the Bahamas, but not enough to keep up with the growth of persons within our country. And so the biggest problem that a lot of people may hear is that, oh, we have a civil service. You know, it's nothing against the civil service, but based on technology, we have 42,000 people working for the government. That's either in the civil service or government agencies or whatever it is that we support financially. And technically, from a technological standpoint, we can do it with about 70. We can replace them with about 7,500 people, which kind of scares people. A lot of time you hear when you say, oh, you're going to cut down to 7,500 people. But what it simply means is, as we don't have any new job growth and technology allows us this, it says that the positions you currently hold will no longer exist. It didn't say that jobs that would no longer exist. So it requires new skill set to be training and upscaling. And this is what we're going to talk about, is that if we come to the point that the jackals who are at the door, we call them the IMF and other individuals, are at the door, if we don't have some substantial growth, not no minuscule growth, because let's go back a little. When Dorian came to the Bahamas, we lost almost 30% of our economy. That left with about 70% of our economy, because Abaco and Grand Bahama, somewhere between 25 and 30% of our economy, it was wiped out. It has not been rebuilt. It's not recovered. Then you have New Providence. Let's put New Providence at 65%. Then you all have another hurricane, another problem in New Providence for a long time that work its best to destroy the economy. The name of it is BPL. And so, you know, so when you look at the black holes and this and that, whatever. So we have not been functioning at optimum what is possible. Another great retardation is the fact that we are somewhat technologically adverse. In June of 2020, an international report says that 99.5%, a lot of people argue me with this, you know, people say the report did not say 99.5% have not adopted advanced technology, off-the-shelf technology. Mm-hmm. The report actually said only 0.5% has adopted. So when I tell people, it means that 99.5% haven't.
And when you mean advanced technology, what are you implying? Because I think on various levels, we know that we have a high penetration of like internet and computer use and certain things.
We report that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What we do is we spread that out to say there's 300,000 of us have cell phones. Well, they maybe count the 60 that I have. So that means the 60 they have, the 60 people that don't. But they would say, just say maybe do the GDP, that we have the number of people. But cell phone data is not broadband, which they consider is now considered a human right. And so we have this facade that because we have 300,000 people holding it and maybe 125,000, 130,000 homes, that every home have it. We saw that not to be true when we were trying to do education with the students. And so it's a misnomer where we want to translate one and apply it to all, and we do not.
Yeah, that's why I say I want you to classify what you mean by that. Yeah. What kind of technology are you talking about with that 0.5%? I think that'll help people to understand and clarify what you mean by that.
Right. Okay. What they said is only 0.5% of Bahamian businesses has adopted advanced off-the-shelf technology. Now, we call Windows and Microsoft Office and Excel and QuickBooks, whatever, those are not advanced technology. Those are off-the-shelf technology. What they're talking about is technology that goes beyond just putting some software on your books, point of sale on your books, and using it. They're talking about technology that brings innovation, transformation, improvement in delivery systems, the back office from the cloud, and all those different things. So we just basically buy some stuff off the shelf and our businesses and simply say, oh, good, we are in the technology field. I'm digitized. That's not what it digitized, because a lot of the people may even have a cash register, point of sale, and they might still even be writing hand receipts and everything else. So what they mean is that what we are capable of and being totally digitized, and a lot of times we can confuse these two. The word digitized is to make digital. Digitalization is utilization of the digitized information. And so—
And I think that's what it is, C. Allen, because you have to realize that, and I tell that to all my guests who are like into a particular field, everybody else doesn't understand it that way. So when you clarify things like what the 0.5% means, because when you say that, people are going to be like, well, we all using, like you said, off the shelf kind of technology. They're not getting the concept that they're talking about innovative new ways of really kind of having that function as a part of your business and or part of your everyday life.
Yes. And that's like being connected to the cloud. That's being like totally paperless. That's being able to run your business remotely. And that's not where people say, oh, I'm using Zoom or I'm using some share my PC or anything of that. I'm talking about totally functional of your business from a remote perspective. And so, and we saw the rush to do it. And then when we thought the economy is going to open up, people lagged off again. Then we went back to lockdown again, and then we went back. And the problem we have with, let's use an example of the digitization. We had government and other people celebrating that we had innovation. Here's what we call innovation. We call innovation where I pick up the phone and call a store, ask them if what I wanted was in stock. Then I drove to the store. The guy came outside to verify, what is it you say you was looking for again? Then he goes into the store and comes back out and say, yes, we have it. Then he takes the order. Then he comes, I give him my credit card. He goes inside, get authorization, come back outside with me to sign, take it back inside, come back outside, and then put it in the trunk of my car. And we said—
Or sitting in the car and making an order. And if they can actually bring the little swipe card to you, you're excited, right?
And we call that, look at innovation. I heard the Minister for Technology said innovation. I almost fell out of my chair and advanced. And I was like, what? I said, now, this is the person that uses Amazon and Walmart and all these other different things that we order online. And you say, boy, you know, you don't fly over and go in the store and do that. That's not, And so another point is that when NIB, one of the largest institutions around, was incapable of giving us a paperless document. So you had to go to their website, print the document, fill it out, sign it, take a picture of it, and scan it back up for them, and then find an email or something to mail it to them.
And hope someone responds and sees your actual document.
But just the mere fact that they did not have it paperless and a couple of weeks or two later, they said, oh, we have a PDF document. And they was like, oh, you could download it and fill it out. And I was like, that is what you, so I'm simply saying is that we somehow believe these incremental advancement in doing 30-year-old technology is innovation to us. It is almost retardation of what we have to do. What we need in this country is a moonshot. Now, let me explain something. In December, in the Guardian paper, December 2009, it said that the Bahamas was the second most digitally prepared country in the world. I have maintained for 15 years that we are number one, because they're just talking about the infrastructure. I'm talking about some intangible variables that make us number one in the world. Imagine this, the Bahamas being the most digitally prepared country in the world and least utilized. Freeport or Grand Bahama, let's use Freeport. Freeport, if counted as a country, would come in as number two. So it isn't that we are not digitally prepared. We are just not utilizing it as a national development tool to accelerate our competitiveness. Where if you look, for instance, another survey, these are not my surveys, these are international company surveys. Another survey from 2019 or 2020 says that the Bahamas was a decade behind in technology. Now, here's the—
I would say even more so. Before you go, just coming home from Canada when I was doing my undergrad degree, and realizing how efficiently I was living just as a student, and coming back home after even going to Trinidad and coming back, I found that we were way behind, even from where I had left. College coming back home, It was almost like going 10, 20 years back.
It's like going back in the cave.
It was so crazy because, like, this idea of not using cash and being able to go in everywhere with my car, we slowly kind of crept into now doing that. And it's expensive to do that for most businesses here. But, like, I could just pretty much, like, jump up and go anywhere in Canada and feel comfortable, just, you know, just simple things like that. It started to dawn on me that we as a country were so far behind the rest of the world.
A lot of people didn't believe that when I came home 17 years ago, I practically had never touched cash for over a decade. Never. I just didn't take cash. And people was like, I was like amazed that, like, you actually touch money and feel it and whatever else. And so here it is, when you add 17 years to that, it's like 30 years I was cashless. When NetBank and all those other digital banks came around, I became part of them. I was part of one of the first digital credit union going back to 1997, the first digital credit union in the United States. We were the first credit union, separate from banks, the first credit union in the United States, right in Miami, that offered online banking, credit cards, and ATM, and all those different things in 1997. And so the world accelerated since then. But going back to your point, my point I was making, where they said we were 10 years behind. Here's what COVID did. COVID has accelerated technology to the point of 2 years every 3 months. So if we have been in our COVID for 18 months, divide that by 2 years for every 3 months. So divide our 18 months by 3 months, which will give us six. Will give us six. Then double that, 12. So essentially, we are now the decade plus 12 years behind. So we are now on just roughly 22 years behind the curveball and where technology is. And I know a lot of people, and I don't want to confuse people, but I want to make an announcement here. The internet died about 3 to 5 years ago. I mean, we still enjoy this concept called the internet and the internet economy. The internet has died 3 to 5 years ago. And we're not going to go deeply. The internet, when we said, as you know it, but we call the World Wide Web the internet. First of all, the internet existed from the 60s, which the translation didn't hit around until 1983. And then the World Wide Web, which allowed the common internet, came around in 92, where you started using words. Before 1992, you had to probably remember 172.168 plus 17 plus 22, something like that to get to a website. There was no Microsoft.com, Dell.com, or anything. I've been in this business since the punch time when you're using punch cards in the late 80s, and okay. So I've seen it all develop. But when I say the internet is dead, I'm talking about the internet as we know it as a basis, because we are now moving to a concept called the metaverse. And believe it or not, Jeffrey Lloyd and I spoke about this in 2005. About this concept called the metaverse that would eventually come into existence. Remind you, when Jeffrey Lloyd and I talked about this, Facebook was still a college campus software. And we even talked about Twitter before it came into existence, that we were going to eventually move into a metaverse, and then we'll understand what a multiverse is. And so, but the fact is that when they finish, just go on Google and see that Facebook and Google and the rest of them are spending billions of dollars in developing the metaverse. And so when you hear people like Michael Amagon. Anyway, sorry, Michael, for messing up your name. But he's a young guy in the early 20s at BTC that has been promoting this concept of digital gaming, e-gaming, for a long time. In fact, it was picked up by Michael Pintard, and the other minister did not do it. But when you see those virtual world, it is actually a new concept. In fact, I don't want to get too much into that. I'm buying real estate. Right now, I'm buying real estate in the digital world. And you can be aware, that's another show we have to do.
Okay, yeah, that's something else we'll have to talk about.
The same way you'll go downtown and buy real estate, right? I'm spending real money for digital real estate because I can build buildings and signs and advertising and whatever is there. But you know, that's a whole different thing, because the metaverse is a whole new concept that's coming into existence. But what happens is, this is where you have to, when we're going to talk about these economies, we now must look for, to leapfrog some things that we are doing, take into account that we are the most digitally prepared country in the world. Secondly, we are the only place that I'm aware of that we can offer digital privacy, constitutional privacy, and constitutional sovereignty to data. And so
we, is that because we really don't have a lot of data laws and structures, and that makes us mendable?
Yes, we don't have any, but here's what happens. I've studied the Constitution, and because I live digital, when I read the Constitution, we only need to put in laws these things, which is just interpreting data as being a sovereign item. So what happens is, and here's in law, the constitutional aspect, if you change the law, let's say I do something and there's a law that prohibits them from accessing the information, they could put, the United States or somebody could put pressure on the Bahamian government, they go change the law, which gives them access. Here's the difference. Constitutional sovereignty and constitutional privacy would require a referendum for us to, for them to change the laws. So what it does, it makes almost every person in the world want to become a digital citizen of the Bahamas. Because anywhere they have data in the world, just like the GDPR or the California law that gives you the right to your data, you could then begin to monetize because you'll own your data. Once registered in the Bahamas as a digital citizen, Facebook, Google, whoever uses data on you will not be able to have access without your consent or paying you when they monetize it. Your medical data, believe it or not, even cancer is a commodity in this new digital world, because we have this BRCA gene or something.
BRCA gene.
So what happens is, believe it or not, it's similar but different by DNA in every single person. So if I have it, I can actually have the rights to that. And should a part of that be incorporated into any solution for any time into the future, my estate and family would have a right to any type of monies made from it. And so,
unlike now, where we have a lot of study and a lot of things being done, and humans seem to be completely unaware, I think we give up our information quite freely.
Right. But this is where the law would make it two things: yours personally, or the property of a sovereign wealth fund, a state. And so essentially, the Bahamas would still own the rights to it. In the essence of, like, when you don't leave, like how you say you leave your bank account and you didn't leave an heir or something, it'll go to the sovereign wealth fund for the benefit of all Bahamians. And so, and this is where the digital rights is fighting, what people are fighting about. And a lot of the individuals, I don't want to go into this code argument, but a lot of the arguments concerning this whole aspect of DNA is what people came to say, protecting and certain rights, because under this whole law about somewhat of GMO, which is a whole different argument again, and this, when we come to the data law, we'll have to have this conversation concerning that if I can cause you to modify your gene, I can also own the rights to it because my modification becomes superior. And so,
that's a whole other story.
Right. But I'm saying to you, but so what happens then is that, believe it or not, we could solve our national debt by properly passing a data sovereignty and a data privacy law. Because now every person in the thing, which is, I really would love to do a show with you on that, so you could understand where I can give you a digital ID, anonymize you, and send you back into the world, like almost through like a VPN, and no one will ever know who you are, but anything shows up to you would still be controlled and managed by behemoths. Right? It's not as complicated as the same, but when you go back to this digital preparedness, no one else in the world, we are literally superior to any other country. In fact, the three mega technology giants would have to submit to us. That's the United States, China, and Russia. Because if we properly do this, we would actually become the gateway of information and data exchange for the rest of the world. But there's some
Let me just make sure. So we would be able to pretty much digitalize ourselves and our content. We would be able to sell that space almost to the world in terms of citizenry. That would then protect their digital ID or identity, which then to be accessed from the rest of the world can be monetized. That's
right now, Facebook and YouTube and all of them are making trillions of dollars off you, and you're not getting anything. So what you're doing, the Bahamas could do is give them, give the world a right to take back. And you like the same way the GDPR requires the data be kept a particular way. And if you watch the California privacy law, it gives you the right to delete data or not to collect data on you. So we simply add a twist to it and says you can collect data, but anything you use that bears this digital ID, if you make a dollar, I get 15 cents or whatever.
Is anyone else doing this? And if not, why?
Because technically,
concept practical. That's what I want to
know. No, it is practical now because the world is all about data. And as we move into the concept of the metaverse, it becomes even more practical. Our advantage is people can create laws. Our advantage is we have a constitutional aspect. You know, the United States Constitution or some of these big countries, they have to amend their constitution to add it to it. Okay, and we don't. We already have it. We just have to move to make sure that we continuously protect it. But here's the beauty about it. We talk about this tech hub. If you talk about this tech hub, if you pass the proper laws, they will run here because you could make it that certain data stored on anybody must be domiciled in the Bahamas.
Say that again, Sea Island.
So you could fix it so you could have any data on Sea Island Johnson must be stored in the Bahamas.
Okay. And do we have the storage capacity for that? Like, is that just in the cloud, or this is like we would have to come up with some of this technology?
No, they would have to come and build their servers here. And tech, when I hear people talk about the hurricane and all these other different things.
Yeah.
See, that's understanding of the technology and how construction works. In fact,
I never understood why we were having such a trouble attracting the tech guys, being right on the tip of America, being a sun sign and sea type of place. They're very much into renewable energy. I always thought that we should have had such a large appeal to a lot of the projects that they were doing. I couldn't understand how we could maneuver ourselves in the mix like that so that we were a part of the conversation.
Improper IP laws, intellectual property protection laws. Forget it. I know what we say. We have no digital laws in the Bahamas. We have laws called digital, but then in the aspect of really protecting digital, they don't. Here's the problem. The tech hub, when I hear the government talking about, we got the tech hub and we're going to do these where people can come work in the Bahamas and everything. Now imagine this, sending China and all these other countries because they were concerned about intellectual property theft. And so you were saying they were taking these super protected item into the United States. And we were running around saying, since you're leaving these places, y'all could come to the Bahamas. And you go, you can't even protect movies and music. And you now want me to take my $1 trillion infrastructure and deposit it into the Bahamas. This is why the tech hub and whatever didn't jump off. Because essentially, with all due respect, what you had was Google research individuals who were basically just saying, thinking that you just, it's almost like going to a restaurant, seeing the menu, you see salmon on the table and asparagus and all the other stuff. So you stop on the way home and buy all the stuff, thinking that you're going to duplicate what you have in the restaurant.
So they weren't prepared. We have the infrastructure. They didn't put the things in place that would have cemented something like tracked it.
Yes, absolutely. Have the conversation. Understand, if they take Dr. The Archer right now and put her on a technology hub, the first thing Google will do is go look at your entire history to see what do you read, what do you do. When they see that, you only do medicine and whatever, they'll be like, see now.
I'm reading everything.
So they look to see the depth of your understanding to see how deep you in. Because remember, you're not talking to a startup company. You're talking to companies with $1 trillion valuation. Right. And so you can't snow them to say, this guy who last week was a lawyer or this person last week was a secretary is now going to guide you into this frontier where you have never been before. And so these are people where they're fighting to steal IT people from each other. And so we talk about it and understand it. So it's just a matter of putting, and believe it or not, there is a number of behemoths who's been in this field for longer than I am. Believe it or not, I have a cousin when we was designing the laptop at IBM who I was naive, a young teenager at the time. So I used to take home classified information to ask him some questions. He was an engineer, not knowing at the time he was working for a competitor who beat us to the market with the laptop. Because I didn't know, I was asking him like, what about this? Because he was an engineer. But I didn't understand.
You sure you want your former bosses to hear something like that?
No, because the laws have now been changed. And with the technology that we talk about then is almost, not almost, is obsolete. Because when I left IBM, you could almost say we were on level 6 incarnation of technology. And today, most likely still level 3 or 4. What has been vision is way bigger than that.
Yeah. So what I gather is we have the space for the tech, but we aren't prepared for it. How do we now, as we look into economies that we can get into, and you know, we talked briefly about these different ideas, and you could let people know that you're always hearing the word green and blue and orange and all of these things when you hear about diversifying the economy. I mean, I think a lot of people hear those things, but they don't truly know what it means. Right?
First, let me say this, right? Let me use the ones that we talk about in the Bahamas. We talk about the blue, the green, the orange, the knowledge, the digital, the conceptual, the silver, the circular, and then Eden Mary Gale, the aquamarine economy. Mm-hmm. She has this concept of combining all of them. Now, now, I use the word digital, but I want you to know that's the small d. There is a big D that the global economy runs on. Every single one of those economies that I spoke of, the green, the orange, the blue, the knowledge, the conceptual, and the digital, the silver, the circular economy, and the aquamarine, all sits on top of a digital economy. You cannot do any of these unless you move into the digital space. Even the data that you would interpret to mean anything that we talk about IP protection of plants and animals and corals and all these different things, those themselves must be digitized. And so the utilization of them is the digitalization, but the that's making them digital. So every single one of these now moves into this big D, digital economy. So let's go back on one point that you said that we spoke of, where we said we are moving away where we have diversifying the economy. I hear people all the time screaming, oh, we need to diversify away from tourism. And my question to them is, not tourism necessarily, but the word hospitality. Hospitality is the 10th largest industry in the world based on revenue. My question to them is, what are we going to diversify into? We can go to number 11, number 15, number 18, or we definitely don't have the infrastructure for number 9, number 8, number 7, or whatever. So we ain't going anywhere. The problem is, we've had a one-horse pony in a 100-horse race. Now, tourism is what people do. And the word hospitality is what the people experience. So at one time, I did a survey on behalf of a client a few years ago, and it said that we were trying to examine the Bahamian hospitality economy. It said at one time we offered sun, sand, sea, and service. And then the new service said we only now offer sun, sand, and sea. We no longer offer service, which then goes back to what we used to offer. It says that at one time we used to be in the hospitality industry, which, like you say, tourism is what people do. Hospitality is what people experience. So they used to come and experience the Bahamas. Now they come to the Bahamas to do things. And the biggest cut into that is we may not realize, but we are now one of the largest destinations in the world for all-inclusive hotels. We like to call them cruise ships. They are nothing more
than inclusive hotels.
Okay? And so when they come off, they
don't without having to pay the property tax or any of the other
anything of that. So when they get off the ship, they're now looking for something to do, and we call it experience the Bahamas because they're now having the cruise ship experience. So they've already exhausted their experience by the time they stop in the Bahamas, and this is why we get the pennies and the change. And so for us to now move into the hospitality industry, we must rethink what is it we have to offer. This whole concept, the cruise industry, one of the most polluting in the world and the pristine Bahamas, is not in our benefit.
And it's amazing before you go on, because we hear our governments talking all the time about climate change and all of these things, and they don't integrate these things into their policy. Like you talked about the cruise ships and how they pollute and all of that is a part of it. But we're very much still, you know, everywhere I looked in the last, we're trying to sell some part of the Bahamas to a cruise ship to be more and more inclusive so that they can keep more and more of their dollar bill. I don't think people realize that when you go on a cruise ship, most of your money is spent by the time you book the cruise ship.
Yep.
You've paid for the cruise ship, all the little service fees. If you they give you packages already of who to tour with, who not, you know, where to go, what to do.
And they take part of the money from the tour too.
Right, because they're with the tour companies, right? And you're spending thousands and thousands of dollars on these prepaid tours. If you even step foot on this island or this country, you've already spent a couple of grand. You're not interested in spending any more money. Some of these experiences include food. And the local guy who thinks he's going to make some money off of you, the most he might get is a little taxi, ferry, fare, or as if, you know, whatever. But there's really very little money in it from a cruise ship point of view.
So I'm trying to do a quick calculation right here, right? We have, let's use the celebrity. We brag about the celebrity cruise that came to the Bahamas. And this is what surprised me, right? The government markets celebrity cruises. I don't mean to pick on them. I just use them as an example.
But sorry, celebrity.
But it's just a figure. They had 600 people on the cruise that paid $19.99. Let's round it off to $2,000. So the cruise ship itself, for that full cruise, only made $1.2 million for their cruise, right? So now the people are coming off the cruise to get some chairs and stuff. But our government is saying there will be millions of dollars to be made. And I go, wait a minute. How do you make more than the person $2,000 at 600 people? So I said, if the cruise ship for that one cruise only made $1.2 million gross, where do we make the millions of dollars servicing them? We don't. So we can only make fractions of that when we give them the chair or whatever else. As opposed to when you talk about the fact that in the Bahamas, you're going to experience the blue economy, as we call it for the ocean. And you can experience the eco, the green economy, and that's the ecotourism. And so when you combine the green and the blue, that's where this concept Eden Mary came up with called the aquamarine. And she will have to further explain where she combined the orange and the knowledge, the conceptual and the digital in it, combining it as one.
So I would think if you're going to put culture into that experience, whether we have a name for it or not, and that's probably what she's just saying, you know, yes, because the digital aspect. And just culturally being in the Bahamas brings that all together. Yeah.
Right. And so essentially what she's saying is that since the Bahamas is the only place, one of the few places, maybe the only place in the world, that you can experience the blue economy, believe it or not, we have most likely within the top five most valuable oceans in the world. Okay. So we have the ocean economy. We have the ecotourism, the green economy. And when you combine them two, they bleed into each other. Then you have the orange economy, which you look and expand about, and it's more than just the creative, because in that orange economy comes culture, heritage, and a whole host of things, and things that are now intangible, because when you go into the digital economy in that part of the orange economy, when you have social influencers, when you even have people taking pictures of our beaches and our copas and all those other different things are underwater. So when you combine all of these variation, you end up with so much more. The knowledge economy then comes from us when you start looking that you have some of the best, you have the largest flats in this region. We have more, what do you call those things, mangroves.
Mangroves,
even on just in Freeport and Grand Bahama alone, than the whole United States and Canada. When you have the fourth largest reef in the world, you have the largest concentration of blue holes there is in the world. You have a naturally occurring. So,
but see, Alan, we're doing some of this already. Is it just about bringing it together on the type of, I guess, platform, or as you can say, make it more efficient, more profitable, because we're doing it in small aspects. You know, people get people do all of this stuff. You know, a lot of people don't realize, I think Bahamians probably know less about what's happening in our economy sometimes than people coming into the country.
But again, we have to be more deliberate. Now, I can tell you, there are foreigners in the Bahamas making billions in our country. Utilizing these very same things. The problem is, let's throw some financing aspect in there. The ocean economy. We have young Bahamians who run out for conch and who run out for fishing and whatever else. And they don't get involved. They go to the development bank and they go to whatever it is to get financing for a boat, right? They need a boat for $300,000. You know what happens? They say they can't qualify. What if we set up an environment where there is a Dr. Cartwright, here's your boat. We retain title collateral for your boat. I just need $60,000 worth of fish per year from you. So in 5 years, you would have paid for your boat just by bringing me the product of what you have. Okay? Now, in the Bahamas, we have thousands of cruise ships in the Bahamas. Bed and B&B and VRBO is, if you go and look at cruise ship yacht B&B in the Bahamas, they get to $20,000 a week. Mm-hmm. Well, why aren't we creating the vehicle so that Sea Island Johnson could go and buy a $1 million yacht that is collateralized and guaranteed by some sovereign entity in the Bahamas, and the people can book and have the same experience? That's why one of the things that Michael Pintar did is a huge thing. If we actually begin to transition behemoths into these economies and begin to protect it from foreigners. So if there are 10,000 cruise ships in the Bahamas, yachts in the Bahamas, let's put 1,000 behemoths on some yachts or train them for captainhood or bring the people in to have them work with them. Because if they're getting $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 a week for 8 people on a yacht, why can't they pay it off in 2 years or 3 years or whatever amount of time? You know, so
I think it's will. I don't know. We haven't had any kind of leadership that was willing to take a gamble on its people. They see the money, but they see the money as other people's money. We've had a problem for a while where our leaders, despite being our leadership of this country as from the Bahamian level, we still have this kind of plantation economics where they feel like they're holding the house for someone else. You know, they're throwing out the red carpet to someone else to enjoy the country. I have this kind of thought where I say we create paradise for other people. It's like we're maintaining this for someone else. Yeah. And I think until they understand this concept that this place is yours, the people here deserve an opportunity to be a part of the economy. You can't have billions of dollars that never touch this place, but is made off of this place. I don't think they understand that concept.
And I would agree with you. Here in Grand Bahama, we need another study I did on behalf of another client says that we need 10,000 bed and breakfast rooms on Grand Bahama to reach what is called net zero. And here's what net zero is. Net zero is where you get 10,000 rooms on Grand Bahama, which will sustain like restaurants and taxi drivers and whatever, 10,000 rooms. Net zero means that you can all make a salary, but you don't get rich. You don't make no real profit. So everything above that gets you above net zero. So if we get about 20,000 rooms on Grand Bahama, you would have a metropolis of hospitality. And when I like to use the word hospitality rather than tourism, because under hospitality comes sports tourism, religious tourism, medical tourism, digital tourism, religious tourism, and all these variations of
which we tried to give away some of that stuff, you know, with that CEB Act or whatever. I was like, you giving away medical tourism before Bahamians have dived into it?
No, but see, here's the problem. You know, I moved to Western Florida in 1993 before we became a municipality in 1996. Now, here's what happens, and we cry about the hospitals. You're a doctor. Do you know, on average, you have doctors in the U.S. is paying a amount per year for liability insurance. That insurance limits them to maybe one operation a week, two operations per month, three operations per month. So we talk about needing this $1 billion to build this mega hospital on Grand Bahama. Well, It's very easy to create a medical tourism environment by simply getting a certain amount of doctors who want to practice in the Bahamas to come under a sovereign liability limit where they pay that $100,000, $250,000 a year. And we're telling them, well, if you're doing three surgeries now, you could do six, you could do seven here in the Bahamas. And we'll, all that goes to cover liability. And but understand this, when the doctors came to the hospital or patients came to the hospital, they got paid for their surgery. The hospital got paid for the stay, for the use of the equipment, for the operating room. All those things came from it. So financing a $1 billion debt is very easy if you strategically think about it and set it up as a sovereign type environment where these individuals will come and even set up clinics and all these other different things in the country. Now, a few years ago, you may not talk about this, but because the world economics have changed, decentralized finance, fintech, and all these other methods of financing have changed. And so not just the hospital, but now you'll have the whole infrastructure support because no one can even come to the Bahamas to support the practice of medical tourism unless they are affiliated with the hospital in case some emergency or something happened. And so it's just a matter of sitting and planning it out. We could come back in New Providence and build a world-class hospital type environment, just not trying to build on top of the old place we have, but finding a location and, yeah, and building a world-class hospital where a helicopter, whatever, can land. So, and I think Miles Monroe said it best. We cannot build the Bahamas on the old ideas. It's impossible.
It's the same old people.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I'm looking at the transition of, you know, when we move from government to government, and it's just recycling the same grouping of
ideas,
people
same
over
ideas
and over. Not even ideas, but those group of people. They didn't accomplish anything in that 5 years.
25 years. I've been here for 25 years.
Yeah, 25 years.
I've been here for 25 years, but then they say, it's not 20. They were not even talking about 25 years consecutively.
No, I'm not talking about 25 years consecutively. So their crew is in. They're up there doing nothing. Their crew is out. They sit back and they wait. They're back in with the same nothingness again. And we wonder why we're not progressing.
Right, but see, again, because of DeFi, probably about 60, I know, we very easily need, if you look at the 16,000 homes that was damaged on Abaco and Grand Bahama, and a lot of people, I tell people all the time, and I'm going to be moving to, I actually form a company that we actually, believe it or not, seamless plug, we're actually offering zero mortgage, zero interest home, zero payment home. Because, and I don't, believe it or not, 2,500 square feet, you have zero mortgage and you have zero payments, and you'll own the home in 10 years. And so what happens is, but this is what technology and then combining it with hospitality allows us to do. When you come back to Grand Bahama, those 20,000 homes needed for Grand Bahama, those 15,000 homes for Abaco. My question to you is, why do we need a mega hotel to come to build an experience that belongs to us? So what of the Bahamian experience, what they're coming for, you know, how, you know, where they're going to be for golf, for tennis, for medical, for the ocean, for the ecosystem. Let's have a conversation on this Bahamian experience.
This is what I'm trying to say to you. I think our leaders have subtracted Bahamians from the equation other than baseline workers. That's the problem. They're not thinking about Bahamians owning the economy and playing vital roles. That's why they can't conceptualize the cultural aspect, the experience of it. And like you say, people are all over the world paying for experiences. Here we had one of the best experiences and we chopped that aspect out.
But again, this is where, finish, you go back to what I said to you about the rooms. Instead of 20,000, a hotel with 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 rooms, Grand Bahama, I want people to understand, Singapore, miles larger than Freeport, not Grand Bahama. Freeport fits in Grand Bahama almost four times. Singapore has 6 million people on an area 30 square miles larger than Freeport. Freeport is more prepared than Singapore. And I hear people talk about hurricanes, whatever. I am going to excuse your ignorance of technology and building. So, because there's places built where typhoon hits way more frequent and earthquakes hits way more frequent than our hurricanes do. Okay? So I'm simply saying is that we could build where you could have 10,000 families own two bed and breakfast that would literally make them millionaires in ADS. So why don't we convert Grand Bahama to that experience? And the same thing with the other old islands. Let's go back to Eleuthera. Iago, you have Eleuthera to have the Disney Cruise Line damage, kill coral, kill the grouper, kill all kind of fish for a few jobs at best. What happens if you preserve that and create a bed and breakfast where you have thousands of bed and breakfasts where people come to spend a week at a time, days at a time, to experience the glass water, the glass window bridge, to experience that echo environment, to experience golfing, horseback riding, whatever else. Those people who fly in, not the $25 you make from the cruise people, these people, you'll make hundreds if not thousands of dollars for their week stay. But at the same time, instead of Disney, you would make hundreds if not thousands of millionaires on Eleuthera by keeping the place pristine as opposed to cutting a canal so people could come off a cruise ship to experience an hour or two. Let who wants to experience that area pay a premium price, enjoy whatever amount of time, spend a day, and go to the place and experience it. Come and experience a couple of days there and experience the Bahamas as you know it. So this whole concept of, oh, we need Disney to do it for us is madness. And so, but let's go back to financing.
Take a quick break, C. Allen. Sorry about that. I know you're just getting into it. Sounding good. But we can take a quick break. The producer is pretty much telling me, and we're going to be right back with me, Dr. D. Archer, and C. Allen Johnson. We're talking about the economy, diversifying, what we have to do, and we'll be back in a moment.
Age is not everything. Now that your kids call you for advice. Now that you can achieve anything you set, nourish your strength and energy with Ensure. Ensure provides protein, antioxidants, key vitamins and minerals to support your immune system. Now that it's your moment to enjoy your vitality, why stop? Your life, your health, your Ensure.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Morning Blend Business.
The economy.
Finance.
Business.
Industry.
Government sector.
Private.
Personal finance.
Investing advice.
Consumer issues. Consumer rights.
Trends and business opportunities.
Morning Blend Business. Following Morning Blend every weekday from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on Guardian Radio 96.9.
Cloth face masks do offer a level of protection against the spread of COVID-19. But only if worn and removed properly and used along with other preventative measures. Your hands should be clean when you put the mask on and when you take it off. Use soap and water or an alcohol-based hand sanitizer. Respiratory droplets from others will stay on the outside of the mask. Do not touch the mask at all once you have it on. Remember, if you touch the front of the mask, the germs will now be on your hands. Remove the mask using the elastic or straps from behind your ears and wash your hands immediately afterwards. If your mask has respiratory droplets, change it. Cloth masks should be washed after every use with soap and water. Along with using a face mask, remember to wash your hands regularly. Practice physical distancing 6 feet apart. Avoid touching your face. Disinfect commonly touched objects and surfaces. And stay at home as much as possible. We must each do our part to prevent the spread of COVID-19.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, Nassau, Bahamas.
and welcome back to the Doctors In with me, Dr. D. Our services. We are here with C. Allen Johnson. We're talking about the economy, what we need to do. We really kind of got into it there. You were getting hot, C. Allen, into you're getting deep into your whole idea of what to do with Freeport. I know your passion because you're living in Freeport, aren't you?
Yeah, I live in Grand Bahama.
Yeah,
Grand Bahama. They keep talking about developing Freeport. We must develop Grand Bahama.
Grand Bahama. There you go. So you were talking about, you know, what we need to do. You know, we don't, the $25 from the cruise ship, we could be developing the kind of infrastructure and creating the kind of attraction. It's not just attraction to the places. Haymans could be making that money instead of $25. Because I see people are, you know, when they rent homes, I have wealthy clients, life keen. These people are renting homes for God knows how much. Their family comes to visit from Europe and they rent a home and it's a different type of spending than $25 from a cruise ship. $17 back, right? We were given $17 back or something.
Yes.
So these people are spending thousands and thousands of dollars. That's a difference in the economy by a lot.
Yeah, see, here's the beauty is, right? Crowdfunding decentralized financing and a whole lot of things allows Bahamians to have access to education. And what I mean by that, if I want to build me a two-bedroom bed, now let's go. If I want to build me a two-bedroom bed and breakfast, it would take me, I need to find 104 people a year to come to my place. But the beauty is, if I sell that in four-year packages or five-year packages, I could literally raise, and we could develop a trust to make sure that this isn't abuse, you know, some point of control or contact. I could raise the $520,000 to build two 500 or 600 square foot apartments. You know the beauty of that is? At the same time, I could build me a 2,500 square foot house along with my two one-bedroom apartments or whatever, even two-bedroom apartments, whatever the amount. But we could create it. That's where I work with people with this so-called zero mortgage, because you don't have a mortgage. Essentially, what I do in working with people is we set up the financing, which we're working out the details right now. We get you the advance booking. Then we'll bill you the house. And we'll hold the house in a kind of like a mortgage type environment until you satisfy those 4 years of rentals that you agreed that we advance across 8 years. And those people could use it, trade it, do whatever they want, come use it themselves. They could use one year, another year. And so, and when they don't use up their 4 weeks or whatever, the house is yours. So worst case scenario is after you don't use up all of this stuff, even in 8 years, you now have a house that you built for $500,000, whatever, free and clear. We know that when you come to a bed and breakfast, there's a energy fee, $50, a cleaning fee, $75. There's some other amenities and things that you can offer. So in essence, you have this total house free, but again, you'll also build a house that is net zero because you'll be practically off the grid because now you've been in a custom house where LED, gas stove, solar water heater or gas water heater, gas dryer, seal as a thermos, so there's no waste of heat.
Let me just understand. So basically you're finding the funding, you're finding the people who will be actually using the amenities. Why do you need the person to be involved? Or is it that you're just trying to spread it around?
I'm trying to spread the wealth. I'm doing like this. One for you, two for me, three for you, four for me. Because Let's be reasonable. C. Allen Johnson cannot build 60,000 units by himself. So I have an idea. I may have 1,000 units, but somebody over there may have 2 or 3 units. So, but what? Why is it so hard for somebody to conceive that I have no problem in making a millionaire next to me? Because why? If I can get a couple hundred people, they'll fight to protect me. So alone, I can have a giant come in and underwrite me. But the whole point is that I can't, if you come to the fact, if you reasonably examine 100,000 rooms to fully have a Bahamian experience, for me to fantasize that I will build 100,000 rooms myself, or for Grand Bahama, that I'm going to go out and build the 20,000 rooms. Why don't we crowdsource?
Where's the money coming from? I mean, it's you're saying crowdsourcing. Okay. Bahamians, yeah. I don't know, Bahamians are just getting into this idea of crowdsourcing. I know in the U.S. it's a lot easier.
I'm simply saying is that what you have is like you, the Deputy Prime Minister, Chester Cooper. He has tourism, he has investments, and he has aviation. Perfect combination.
Right.
So essentially, you'd now set up institution to give some form of security to these individuals so they don't believe that they're going to send, that you're going to have 104 people total. Send me a total of $520,000 and I'm going to go buy one Jeep and one car and go on vacation myself. So,
okay, so you need the government involvement.
A sense of brand security, because you want to protect the brand anyway. But what happens is that this isn't where governments, you want it, and I want it to be a form of almost like a sovereign fund. Because this isn't where government actually, I don't want them to give it to family, friends, lovers, finances, foreigners.
Because I'm just trying to tell you, I think until we start finding ways around government in the sense that all they provide is the,
Three things. Legislation, policy, and programs.
Right.
And hands off.
Hands off. Because not to say that, I'm not saying anybody, you know, whatever, but we all know that this is a small-knit community, and it tends to start off as a beautiful program that goes sideways. I'm just going to ask anyone who wants to jump in. 323-325-4259. We're talking about the Bahamian economy.
Now, let me use an example. $8 billion for like 20,000 units. Do you know government could finance this right now itself? Okay, we got 3 million acres or whatever amount of acres we have. All government has to do is form a sovereign wealth fund that says all assets in the Bahamas, known and unknown, seen and unseen, tangible and intangible, is surrendered to the sovereign wealth fund.
Now, you sound like Dr. Gilbert Morris now.
So I copied that actually from Eden Mary Gator. She has an enhancement of it. Those six things covers everything. Now, I want you now to imagine this. Take 50,000 acres, and I don't want to sell it. I want to put it in a development trust. If you only raise $300,000 per acre, right? Just times the 50,000 by $300,000, and you will have the 15. Now, we said we have millions of acres, beachfronts and everything else. So if you have an acre that could even produce $300,000 one time, but you still own it, you have now created $15 billion of money out of thin air that you can utilize to develop. But we're talking about developing 50,000 acres that actually produces revenue on a continuous basis.
We got a call, C. Allen. Caller, you're on the air.
Good night, Mom. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Welcome to the show.
Good night.
I think I met you before, but I'm not sure. Now, you wanted me to ask a question?
Yes. whatever you wanted to ask or comment on, sir, that's fine.
But I need a doctor first.
Oh, it's a medical thing.
Yes, how can I get to you?
Yes, you can call me 326 or 429-4880.
326, go slow, please.
Sorry about that. 326.
Yes.
1521.
151.
1521.
1521.
Yes, sir. Or 429-4880. This WhatsApp now. 429-4880.
4880.
Yes. 4880.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, no problem, sir. Yes. Okay.
Okay.
You know, I'm a doctor on radio.
I know you're a doctor.
I got to take all of those, right?
But yes. I heard the concierge service, so you have to do the concierge.
Oh, definitely. So, see, I buy into this concept of there's a big chunk of the clinic, but I do concierge. So I go to homes all over all over New Providence. Sometimes I get calls to fly into other islands. I don't have time so much, so I have to guess bring some other doctors in with me.
But this is why we got to build the 20,000 rooms. So Remember, those 20,000 people staying every week, you're always going to have some sort of medical need. So right. they would. That's where, this is where the feeder program comes in. Because, you know, on the wall, I tell you, if you need a doctor, they're going to number on the wall, you call the doctor. And she'll not only come see you, but she'll anticipate what you need and bring the medication with her. So you don't have to
worry about it. And so I take hospitality into medical care.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? Yes. And so, so as I'm my patients get an experience with me of, I think, very high class, high level of care, as well as, you know, they enjoy having someone who can speak to them from a Bahamian perspective, who is also skilled in what they're doing. So that's always a plus.
And so this is where I said that we just have to reimagine the Bahamian economy, Bahamas reimagine. And so we have to have a conversation. This is why I say the ministers, actually for me, I think three ministers, I think is most important, actually four. Here's my four picks that I think is the most important in the Bahamas right now. The Minister of Finance and Prime Minister, Mr. Brave, Philip Brave Davis. The second one I have is Chester Cooper with his portfolio of tourism, investments, and aviation.
Sorry, I'm missing like a bunch of calls. Sorry, caller, you're on the air.
Hello, good night. How you doing, Dr. Archer?
I'm good. How you doing?
But you know, I know you're doing, Mr. Johnson.
I'm all right, sir. 52.
Dr. D, I was hoping and fair to us even intravenous IV injections versus intramuscular and the myocarditis and whatever they're lying to us about. I just make a little joke, but I want to ask Alan a very important question that concerns the data, and you know, I always listen to him when he speaks, because I know in Europe, I want him to listen, in Europe, right, they have more stringent data laws, right, as far as data protection. And so one of the things I've been hearing, because I read a lot, so what I'm concerned about is the legality of making data anonymous at source. I know we have the right to, I think in Europe they give the people the right if they wanted data to be used or not. But in reading The Great Reset, I was quite upset with the globalist, antagonistic, globalicious ideal that they want to take away our data rights. And this is actually what they're saying in the book. They want to take away just expand on that for me, please, as far as making data anonymous at source. I'll hang up and listen, Dr. Right. D.
But okay, you know, 52, my whole concept of data sovereignty and data privacy is based on where the world is projecting that these mega corporations will own your data. It's actually an anti-type environment where you get to own and control your data. Now, I don't want this way. I think Dr. Catherine and I can do another show. But once you have a digital citizenship, we will anonymize who you are. And so essentially, but we'll have a global database, and we can do this for fintech also, where people have financial services. We will positively KYC you, but when you leave out of the digital domain here, nobody else will know who you are. But the mere fact that you have a digital passport from the Bahamas shows that you are who you are. But here's the beauty. If there is information on you, they must meet the constitutional bar of our laws, not just simply, we're doing a fishing expedition. And so this is where the whole concept of this data and anonymity comes in. And so essentially, I'm talking about building a world within the world, or the world within the metaverse, a safe haven for anyone in the world. And I think a few billion people would want citizenship to actually reside in the Bahamas.
And that's always been our thing here, right? Kind of the safe haven for maybe what goes a little against the grain. We have another caller. Caller, you're on the air.
Ellen.
We still have that. Good night.
Listen, I'll see, Ellen, when you digitize me, I want you to make sure that my IP address, it's not a regular 32-bit or 64-bit IP address. Now you got to fix me up right with this, okay, C. Allen?
We might try.
I want a terabyte IP address, C. Allen. As in me.
No, I have some. Listen to me. I have some ideas for what is called data protection that will actually overcome even quantum computing, because your actual DNA can actually become a means of identifying who you are within yourself. And so we have some, I'm saying we just have to have a discussion, we can begin the progress. And here's the beauty. When you have, once you create the law, you will have some of the greatest minds in the world who will come and seek to become part of the book.
Be a part of that.
I'm so anxious to see that happen, because when that does, you will escape. And that's what we need happen. I would like to ask my doc something. Doc, I have in my presence this thing called ivermectin, and I have hydroxychloroquine. I was able to get them in. And I'm hearing that doctors are using it, but they're not giving it to patients. Is this something that could have in my possession?
Reason is this has all of a sudden come extremely controversial. Ivermectin is a drug that is a really old drug. Same thing as HCQ. So, but for some reason during this COVID point in time, these have become controversial. So I'm not sure. I'm trying to get clarity on that. But I know there's a lot of doctors who believe in ivermectin and some of these other drugs. They have been using them. I think there has been some issue about authorities not wanting them to use them recently. So I think that's something that's been discussed in the medical community.
See, Alan, I have one to drop on you. When you go to the Cable Bahamas area on, I think that is Ponciana, wherever it is, there is a building that has no windows, but just one door. And I'm pretty sure you know exactly what's housing there. Cable Bahamas makes more money what goes on in that building that's selling us subscriptions. You agree, Ciara? Have a wonderful evening. I love your show.
No. Cable Bahamas and others don't hide what it is. It's just
that people don't conceptualize what's going on. We have another caller? Caller, are you there? You can come on. I don't know. We might have lost someone. Do we have another caller, producer? That was the last one. If you were on there and you want to call back, we will take your call. Sorry about that. We do a lot of talking on this show. So I think a lot of people are getting into that that idea, which is very different. And I like how it's kind of the antithesis of this global kind of agenda of where we're going. You know, I'm kind of cool, but I like to go against the grain a little bit. So I too look at where we're going in the future and be like, oh, how do we counteract that? Because there's always going to be a market for that too.
Right. I believe in setting up a data Eden. Okay. This is the environment. And like you say, and you begin to build it and they will come. And what happens is that, but what happens now, you're talking about developing young behemoths into coding. And I'm talking about quantum computing and artificial intelligence, and I'm talking about even beyond general AI. And so I'm talking about even to the point where we beginning to think where we may eventually move to sentient beings. It's like China now has moved.
Now you sound like you're doing Elon. We got to watch you.
I know some people call me a humanist or whatever they call it, transhumanist.
We gotta watch you. We gotta give you so much space, and then we gotta just really back just a little bit before you take us beyond where they want to take us.
But what happens is I believe in if we get there, I do believe that if we are to move there, we should still have sovereignty.
And that's where the lines get blurred, because whenever you start putting these different things together, there's always somebody who wants control. There's always somebody who's going to be in some form of control. I think that's where it gets a little bit dangerous. So when you get to that level, hopefully that's going to be,
what I'm saying is I'm going to prepare my grandkids for it. That's because I know it won't be here, but it's coming. So we don't need to wait for it to happen. We can set the footprint of the garden of this protection, and we can build on it, because what we're going to do is we'll now have behemoths and others. And there's some advance. And see, a lot of things I talk about
You have to understand, C. Allen, that we have governments who are still trying to get kids to pass BGCSE. That's where their minds are. Right?
Let's go back to those four people I spoke about. The Prime Minister, the Deputy Prime Minister with his investments. Education. I think she has one of the most powerful. Here's what happened. Let me come back to education.
Most powerful.
Right. The next one that comes is Obadiah Wilscombe with Ministry of Social Services. We use social services as the dumping ground. And we have, and I use, he used a trigger word that got me excited when he says end poverty, because that word end poverty moves me into somewhat of the sustainable development goals. But here's the problem. To end poverty, that means he must document housing, education, food, health, everything, and direct those other ministries into resolving them, even education. Now, here's go back to the education. We have this digital education. That digitization of education is teaching each child at its own level, at its own pace, to move them to a preset goal of where they need to be. Right now, what we have is Zoom classes. We don't have teaching. What we need to do is have like an ADAPT program where we identify each person's skill set, involve technology in teaching them. When a teacher teaches a class, by the time a teacher teaches a class 10 times, technically the teacher should not have to teach class again, because we now have all the data and information we have. We just have to make sure we protect her or him or her intellectual property rights. But we have now the data. Why is it that a teacher has to come back and teach the same class again when we have video recordings and animation and all these other different things, and well, it's a combination of artificial intelligence. And so we can create a platform that we need to export. Just imagine that we talk about the knowledge economy and even the conceptual economy right here, where we create a platform for 100,000 people that we must now, the Caribbean and South America, that is not at the level that we are. And so
you mean we could be innovators? I mean, I think that concept misses right over the head of a lot of people. We're not just going to follow coffee and paste and bring in foreign consultants. No.
We are going to design the use. Difference. We don't have to reinvent the technology. You know, it's the syllabus or the curriculum that we must develop. Google, Facebook, all these other people have, and SAP and these other data companies have really. Why do we spend millions of dollars to develop what they already spent billions to do when we could have just bought a space in there for a few $1,000s a month, or send a server to their environment and just license their software? And so all those students who miss classes, we would have the computer identify their skill set and put where they need to be. So every single child will be taught to sit in front of the camera and scream at a group of people. That is passé. That is so 20th century.
I would say I think some kids like that interaction. I don't want to lose it completely, but I do agree in integrating some of this stuff, because like you said, children. Yeah, I know. Children are missing classes. I don't know why they're not taping them and making it easier available. Kids learn at different paces, you know, and so some kids are going to have to go over that class four times. They might have to do it in a worksheet. They might have to do it in a video. They might have to do it, you know, certain kids like me, I'm a visual and auto person. Right. If I'm watching an actual class, things that teacher said to me, you got to read multiple times. Some people have to hear it from someone else. So yes, we do need.
I'm not talking about the digital learning. You know, I'm talking about this so-called hybrid. So must develop the socialization skills. So what I'm simply saying is that, but the socialization skills become primary because that's where they're going to be interacting. So we have to also keep the humanization of it, because again, these new kids going into school, coming into that metaverse I'm talking about. So I'm talking about differentiating our learning system. So there is a blended environment, but when they come for socialization, it is not where they sit in the class with 50 other kids staring.
Oh, yeah. So certainly. So if you look at like the Norwegian countries and those places, they do education quite differently, and they're doing a lot better, where, you know, they go out and they say, you want to learn about a tree? Let's go out, kids. We're going to go and look at some trees, touch some leaves, understand photosynthesis. This is how we're going to do it. Kind of like the philosophers back in the temple and, you know, talk philosophy, you know? So
but the thing is, I don't believe in grades. I don't believe that you're in grade 1, 2, 3, or 5. I believe that we develop the whole person. And so essentially, I believe in grades for socialization skills, but not in this whole core grade of learning, if each one is being taught at their own individual level. So I could play ball with everybody else, but I may need a little bit of help over here, or I may even be more advanced with the people. So why can't, for socialization aspect or for real-time learning of the real environment, we can learn together in those experiences? Because we could be, you know, like you said, you could be a better visual learner, So here it is that you will be more advanced in that socialization aspect, and I'm more advanced in the learning aspect. So this is where the socialization balance comes in.
Yeah, definitely. So I definitely believe that there's a lot of reform needed in there for education. I think that's our path to it. But like I said, if your only job is trying to...
But this is the economy. We just talked about diversifying the economy. We're talking... Yeah. But
that has to be integrated. So all those things you talked about, right? You know, even though we have this cabinet that sits down and supposed to come down with a plan, we still see that they come out sometimes with completely different things that are not working with what they say they're going to be working with. So there's some type of disconnect because there's no, I guess, strategic plan that's a thread straight across.
It's a five-year plan. It's a five-year plan.
It's a five-year plan.
It's a five-year marketing plan as opposed to a national plan. So, but when you look at the policing and you look at all of these different things, digitization of our economy and then digitalization by use of it, we could actually create the most wealthiest country intellectually as well as cash-wise or whatever you want to put it in the world. I'm talking about the fact that we talk about our natural resources. We have.
Do you think this could be done in 20 years?
No, I think it'd be done in six.
6 years.
No, the education part, because we can do is burn candles at both ends. When you use technology, it enhances learning and capabilities. So when you start teaching Sea Island and his own skill and everyone else, and each person finds their own, when you have an economy defined, once that person can define where they want to fit in, you're no longer teaching them in a blanket type environment. You are teaching them that, like you say, we're going to get rid of the whole new thing of 3 hours and then teach them the skill that's very specific to what they want to develop and who they want to become. And so
it's kind of early understanding of where they would fall in the cogwheel in a sense, and then pushing them in that direction and providing
and allowing
education for that.
And allowing different models of developing the economy. If you break the seven different models down, we need 100,000 jobs. If you say we're going to put 7,000 or let's say 15,000 people in each one, under each one of those subcategories, just say the hospitality, you have six or seven other categories. So technically, you're only moving 500 people in each of these subcategories, and we could create in the shortest period of time while we're building this whole digital Bahamas, we could create the revenue stream that is necessary for behemoths that exist today to sustain themselves by breaking down each of these categories of the green, the orange, the blue, and whatever else in it, and finding, we put 300 over here, 100 over here, 200 over here. And so when you look at 7 times 7, right, that's 49, times that by, the amount of jobs you create, plus the multiples and the support and whatever, we could very easily, in 6 or 7 years, meet the...
Creating jobs as we go along the way. It's a similar concept for the medical field and how we could make it more efficiently as we bring in students. We should have an idea of where they're going and create the type of pathways where they'd be used appropriately instead of this kind of ad hoc, just a bunch of people trying to do medicine and then they get in the hospital and they don't know where they want to be or what they want to do and they try to get into a program. You would think that our profession would sit down and kind of think about things in that particular way. Sadly, we're even there, it doesn't happen. So that is something even, I've been thinking about this. And when I was in the union, I did propose the idea, but they thought they had more important things to deal with.
But add education tourism to it. The U.S. Embassy denies thousands of visas per year. Why? Because they're afraid of what they're going to do in the U.S. and ever. But a portal that gives access to all the U.S. Products right here in the Bahamas. Move to protect our citizenship with a revision of the laws. And those thousands of individuals that are denied, we have the digital infrastructure. Haiti doesn't have it. And all these other countries in the Caribbean don't have the digital infrastructure to support the digital learning. So why not let's have an education system with thousands of students living in the Bahamas, but attending school in the U.S. and other and Canada and other places. It's an easy fix. And so we'll have housing and all these other different things that they have to have.
They got to get the secure electricity up as well. So.
No, but that's the easy part.
That's a part of it.
The problem is this. Here's the problem, and this is why this is important. The only reason $300 million will generate enough electricity in New Providence for every government is not telling you for them to they must develop another alternative revenue stream other than carbon taxes. That's why they can't get rid of BPL. So let's create this whole new tax system, this revenue system, and we could dump BPL and go green as part of the green economy and the blue economy in the shortest period of time.
Definitely true. And believe it or not, Sian, and I told you, the time runs out pretty quickly. We've already killed an hour and a half, and we've just dived into this topic like that. So we definitely got to come back and talk about some of these things. I know I'm going to get some feedback about this show, so they're going to tell me what they want you to talk about. So I want to thank you for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're practically out of time, and I want to thank everybody for listening. The Doctor's In with me, Dr. D. Archer, every Tuesday night at 7:30. I'll see you then. Good night.
Good night.